Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today, I'm excited to welcome back as a special guest, Dr. Moshe Toam. Hello, Moshe.
Hello, Ron.
Moshe is, to remind you, he was on our show about 4 weeks ago. He's a senior psychiatrist and psychotherapist with special training in psychosomatic medicine. We've been old friends, so this is lovely to catch up on our radio show. And I was hoping today to focus on unusual cases. Anyone who does psychotherapy long enough or hypnosis long enough will run into unusual situations. I'll start off by sharing one of my unusual cases. And Moshe, I know you've talked to me about some of your experiences. Maybe we've had some more recent ones. But I will start off with a brief unusual case to get this ball rolling. So in my book about hypnosis, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, I told this story. A 12-year-old girl came to see me, and she was very anxious. Why? Because a ghost came to see her every night telling her to kill herself. And the way I approach patients is that I go to the source. In this case, it was the ghost, even though I don't know whether the ghost is real or not, but I'm going to talk to the ghost. Now, I should tell you, she'd been hospitalized twice for trying to commit suicide. She was on antipsychotic medications trying to make the ghost go away, but the ghost still came. So I asked to speak to the ghost, and the girl said, well, you can't because she only comes at night. And I said, you can control your ghost, have her come in. So the ghost came in. I did not see the ghost, so everything I'm reporting the ghost is saying is through the girl. I said to the ghost, is it true you want the girl to kill herself? And the girl said, yes. And I said, why is it? Well, she's had a horrible childhood, explains the ghost, and if she kills herself, she can relive her childhood in a better way. And I said, but I'm working with the girl to help her deal with her difficult childhood, and when she dies of old age, not if, but when, she can relive her childhood if she wants to. And the ghost said, that works for me. I would like to become her guardian angel. And I turned to the girl and said, would it be okay if the ghost becomes your guardian angel? And the girl said, yes, as long as I don't have to see her anymore because she spooks me. And I said to the ghost, are you willing not to be seen again? And the ghost said, yes. I said to the girl, say goodbye to the ghost. Goodbye to the ghost. The ghost left and never came back. I was seeing her every night, never came back. After 6 months, we took her off all of her antipsychotic medications and the supervision of a psychiatrist, and she left me with a dose just on Prozac, which is an antidepressant. That's the story I wrote in my book. Now I'm going to tell you the rest of the story, and you'll understand in a minute why I didn't put it into my book about hypnosis. The rest of the story is like this. After this session, I wasn't quite sure how this girl would respond. She tried to commit suicide a couple of times already. So with her permission, we told her mother what had happened. And the mother said, what did the ghost look like? And my patient said, oh, she was like a 3-year-old girl in a white dress. And the mother said, oh, that's what I've been seeing around the house some mornings. So I didn't, you can make of it what you like. I left it out of the book because people have a hard enough time accepting hypnosis as a viable therapy. To start talking about these strange cases, they might say this, they wouldn't believe it. So So that's why I left out of the book. But I've encountered many similar situations over the 25 years I've been in the hypnosis world, and maybe I'll share some more of my stories. But Moshe, tell me how you react. How do you explain from a psychiatric standpoint that the mother saw the ghost?
Well, I don't know. You're asking me to come up with a hypothesis and so on, but I'll do my best. Okay. You and I, both of us know that in trance states and hypnotic states or trance-like states, people can have visual hallucinations. Okay? You and I also know that most trance-like hypnotic states happen spontaneously, quote-unquote, on their own, without the hypnotist, quote, giving them an induction, formal induction of hypnosis. So, people can have hallucinations, visual hallucinations, auditory hallucinations in these trance-like states. And so, the mother could have seen this because, you know, when you have a real visual hallucination, you actually see an object, you see something that actually is not there. It is a projection from their own mind or brain, if you wish, mind out there, and that's what a visual hallucination is all about. Same thing goes for auditory hallucinations and tactile hallucinations and smell hallucinations and so on and so forth. So that would be one way to explain what actually happened there. But the beauty of your story is that you didn't approach it from a, quote, scientific point of view, trying to explain what that is, give it a name. Let's say, oh, she is psychotic. Let's give her antipsychotic drugs, which, of course, were given and it didn't help. But you approached it in a practical, clinical way, which is not focusing on trying to explain it, but saying, oh, you have a ghost? Okay, I'd like to talk to the ghost. Okay, and of course, you ended up, quote, talking to the ghost, unquote. One way to approach it, explain it scientifically, is that you're actually talking to a, quote, another compartmentalized, if you wish, part of her mind, which she experienced as, quote, not me, as a separate part, which she called the ghost. Okay? And so what you did is you communicated with that part of her mind, and you settled the situation in a way that solved the problem, which was the fear of suicide attempts, or, God forbid, you know, a, quote, a suicide attempt that would end up with her death. And so you resolved it in a very clinically focused, practical way without getting obsessed about the science behind it. And I salute you for that.
And I love talking to you, Moshe, because you always ground my stories. And because I fly to where the patients take me, sometimes the stories take me in interesting directions.
Yes. And the beauty of why you are such an effective therapist is because you can do that. You do it, and you can do it by focusing on the practicality of the moment, leading you to the most effective solution or therapeutic outcome without being obsessed with the MD behind your degree, you know, medical doctor and all the stuff you learned in medical school, what is possible, what's not possible, da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, we can all get obsessed about those things, but you are able to free yourself from that and focus on the most effective therapeutic solution for the problem or the patient that is in front of you right there and there. And as I said, I have great respect for you and your clinical skills in doing it.
Now, I know you've done similar things. Can you share one of the situations you've had with one of your patients?
Yes, I have quite a few. But here's what comes to mind. I've had lots of patients in my practice that were referred to me by, I would say, primary care physicians as well as specialists in different parts of medicine. So one day I get a new patient referred to me by a pulmonologist who diagnosed her suffering from bronchial asthma, and she was having shortness of breath, with wheezing, and was treated with, she was in a wheelchair and was on oxygen. So she is wheeled into my office, sitting in the waiting room with her husband in the wheelchair. And the reason she was referred to me is because all the treatments that this pulmonologist used did not really work. Even the corticosteroid inhalers had only limited success, and eventually she developed serious side effects, and so he had to reduce the dose and eventually stop the corticosteroid inhalers. So, to make a long story short, the husband wheels her into my office, and I hear the story about the asthma and when it started and how long she's been suffering from it and how frustrated she feels and how hopeless she feels regarding the situation. And as we talk about her breathing, I ask her, when is the last time you remember that you were able to be running around and doing things that you like to do and having fun and enjoying yourself? And having no, you know, not being connected to a wheelchair or to oxygen and no problems in your breathing. So she sits there in a wheelchair and she closes her eyes and describes a situation where she was 12 or 13 years old and she was on vacation with her parents and the extended family, cousins, first cousins, and others in a park in northern West Virginia, which is like a sliver between Ohio and Pennsylvania, and some call it the Panhandle. But anyway, and that's a beautiful park, which is very well known. So she says that's it, and I ask her to describe to me what is it that she had so much fun there. So she goes into details describing the games they were playing and how she was able to run around. She was very good with that, and she was climbing up on a tree, hiding from the rest of the group and their games and so on. And as she goes into the details describing it, her eyelids close and start to flutter, and she goes into greater detail of it. And as she describes it, I ask her a question here and there to describe, like, what kind of tree was it, what kind of grass, how is she dressed, who else is there, what is the fun that she is having, and she giggles and laughs and enjoying describing how much she enjoyed herself. And as that goes on, that went on for about, I would say, 20, 25 minutes with the details of her description. And then, spontaneously, suddenly, she opens her eyes, looks at me and says, I'm cured. She wraps over off her face, the mask with the oxygen she was receiving, disconnects herself from the oxygen, stands up from the wheelchair, opens the door, goes out to the waiting room where her husband is waiting, and says, David, I am cured. Look at me. I don't need oxygen anymore. And she walks out of the office, not in a wheelchair, but walking, and no shortness of breath and no wheezing. And I did not use any formal hypnosis. I didn't do a formal induction. I didn't do a, quote, an uninduction. I didn't use the word hypnosis with her. So that, for me, was a rather startling outcome of something I wasn't actually planning to do hypnosis with her in the session. I was more looking for, describe to me when is the last time you felt so good. And she went into details describing it, and that spontaneously was the outcome. I had follow-up discussions with the pulmonologist about her, and he said all he knows that she doesn't come to visits anymore, and from what he heard from the husband, she's doing fine. So, here's a story for you that surprised me as well.
An excellent story. Now, why did you ask her to describe how it was when she felt well? What were you going to do, assuming she didn't have the miracle cure?
I did what you do so well, which is I followed her story. And I was interested in that because, as you know me, I like to focus on the positive. So if somebody comes in very sick, I'd like to focus on the positive. And in her case, the positive was what she was able to do in the past when she was well. focusing on that well and her situation was going into very specific details describing that situation. How she was playing, what was the color of her clothes she was wearing, the trees, the grass, the squirrels she saw, the rabbits, all those details. The sounds and the voices of the other kids she was playing with, the cousins that were there, and so on. So I simply followed her description by listening to it and sort of following it, not just by listening, but by asking and encouraging her to give me more details of what she was experiencing.
It's a marvelous story. We're both Jewish, but it's a Jesus type of story of curing, curing somebody who's blind just by touching them or talking to them. And this is a kind of miracle kind of story that you had in your office. It's so cool.
Yes, right there in the office. I was so surprised, and I guess I didn't want to jinx it by saying, yeah, that's not possible. How could it be? Blah, blah, blah. You were just hysterical. You didn't have really asthma, blah, 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 blah. I didn't do any of that. I simply accepted the outcome. Even though I was very surprised about it, I didn't doubt it. I accepted it. And that reminds me of other stories that I've had over the years with patients in other situations. I'll give you an example. I've had numerous situations where I would give the patient a specific medication. Oh, let's say an antidepressant, okay, or anti-anxiety medication after a full evaluation and so on. And I would ask the patient to, what I learned in medical school, which I wouldn't surprise you, of course, was that I would say to patients when I give them a new medication is that call me if you have any problems, and we'll give them a whole list of side effects. And guess what would happen? I would get a call with side effects after I gave them the whole list. Instead, I reframed it, and I said to myself, how can I say the same thing? Because obviously I'm giving them a suggestion. I said to myself, how can I give them a suggestion that will give me a positive, good outcome? So I would say something like this. Yes, this is a new medication you haven't used before. However, I'd like you to make me a promise. And they said, what? I said, will you please call me next week on Tuesday, even if you begin to feel better? And they looked at me and said, can we shake hands on it? Yes, we shook hands. And the suggestion was, please promise that you're going to call me next Tuesday, even if you begin to feel better. And what the results were, I would get those calls, but the calls I would get is that they reported feeling much better. And in some cases, so much better that they would swear that this is a miracle drug. Now, of course, what I didn't do, which I was tempted to do sometimes, was scientifically, that's not possible. The antidepressant is supposed to start working only after 3 weeks, according to the description, of the drug and by the pharmaceutical company, and only if you reach this and this dose. And I would start usually with a very low dose. And so I accepted it, and you can say this was part of it was a placebo effect, of course, because the patients believed that this was going to work based on the suggestions I gave them in the office. And then I would enhance those suggestions and get even better results. For example, I would say to them in the session, can I help you with, with some water or with a cup of tea? And I would help them use it by swallowing a sample of the new medication that I would give them. I would give them a sample. They would swallow the pill right in my office, connected with a cup of tea of their liking. So obviously, by that suggestion, I would connect the cup of tea that they liked, that was their choice, with the pill that they swallowed in my office. So what happened there is they incorporated, by swallowing, you're familiar with the concept, incorporation, which is literally swallowing something, and then connecting it with the internalization of the positive effect of the suggestion that's happening in the office, with swallowing the tea, connecting with a pill. And in the future, I would ask them to take that pill at home with a cup of tea of their liking. So obviously what happened there was a coupling, if you wish, between the pill that's swallowed and the cup of tea that they're drinking that smells so good, which they like. And all this started in the office because they didn't only incorporate it, the pill itself, by swallowing it with the tea. They did something else. They internalized the positive, corrective emotional experience that they had in the session with me. The therapeutic experience was also coupled with that cup of tea and the new pill they were taking. And guess what would happen? Commonly, what would happen is that I would get a call and they would say, 2 days or a day later, I'm feeling much better. I think I'm cured, quote unquote. Obviously, part of it was the placebo effect, but maybe there was more than that. I'd be interested with you, Ron, to give me your perspective about that.
I love it. This is a new description of couples therapy. Great job, Moshe. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our special guest, Dr. Moshe Toam, who is sharing some of his clinical experience with us and couples therapy, coupling tea and the therapeutic effects of the office and the pill at one point. I did a similar thing, Moshe. When I first teach self-hypnosis, which is typically at a second visit, I will guide the patient in a favorite place. Imagine being in a comfortable place. Imagine all your senses. I'll do progressive relaxation and anchor it with a gesture. So whenever they make the gesture, they can recall and bring back the calming state. And that's pretty much a standard session like that. Then when we're done, I'll ask the patient how they felt, and generally they feel more relaxed. I said, great, so now I'm going to ask you to do the same thing again. You're going to, but this will be on your own. You're going to go to your favorite place, imagine all your senses, relax from head to toe, practice your sign, tell yourself good things, and then come back. When you come back, I want you to tell me, did it work the same as when we did it together, or did it work even better? Notice I don't say, or worse, I don't mention that. That's not an option. So they come back, and they say, oh, that was the same, or that was better. And my response is always, well, that's great. That means you could do this on your own. You don't need me. But using suggestion, I very rarely a patient says, that didn't work quite as well. Like one in a hundred will not choose one of the two choices I gave them. And, of course, they have a therapeutic effect.
Yeah. I have another story to tell you. You asked me about unusual stories. You want me to tell one more?
Please.
Okay. This is the story of a man and a woman who had one son, one child only. That son was, I think, reaching 17 and a half, almost 18. The couple went on vacation with their son every year in the summer, and had a good time and so on. Well, one year the son was reaching, 17 and a half, and he didn't want to go with his parents. He wanted to stay home and have a good time with his friends. And the son had, in the past, the tendency to do stuff that his parents didn't like, using alcoholic beverages and parties with his friends and so on. He was in high school. So he promised them, and they asked him to promise that he would not do this, and he would not definitely do this and use the car in driving. And he promised them he wouldn't. Well, guess what happened? While they're on vacation, they get the phone call that their son was found dead with his friend on the road. They got off the road in high speeding and, bumped into a tree, and both of them were killed. Of course, they rushed home, and they were both devastated. That was the one and only child. And the grieving was very intense and deep, not just crying, but feeling like this is it. Life isn't worth living anymore, and how could this happen to them, and on and on and on and on. And the father, especially, was very close to his son. On one hand, he was very sad, and couldn't sleep at night. And on the other hand, he felt very angry and betrayed by the son, because the son promised he would not do this. He would not get drunk and drive the car, and he did it. And, of course, he ended up killing himself and his friend. So how do you help? What do you do? How do you handle it? How do you deal with that? Well, apparently, the father, I asked the father, tell me, if you had a chance to speak to your son, what do you think your son would tell you how to handle the situation? And the father said, oh, doctor, I wish I had a chance to talk to him again, to have at least a chance to bring closure to this whole incident and also in our relationship. I'm thinking about it all the time. In fact, sometimes, even if I don't close my eyes, I can hear his voice in my head. So I asked him, would you be willing to write a letter to your son and describe to him how much agony and pain you and your wife are going through after the loss of his life? And then ask him if he would be willing to come to you in a dream at night and have a dialogue with you and help you to process what you're going through. And to my surprise, the father said, yes, I'll do that. So he wrote a letter, and I asked him to write this letter shortly before he goes to sleep and put it on his nightstand. So he did, and at night in his dream, he was dreaming about the sun. And the sun came to him in a dream, and they had a dialogue, and so to speak, a meeting. In that dialogue, they were discussing what happened. The father was asking for details, how did it happen. The son described to him that he didn't really want to do the driving. He was talked into it by his friend. He felt confident that he would be fine, da-da-da-da, all that stuff. And the most important thing is the son, or if you wish, in the dream, was apologizing to the father, asked him for forgiveness, and was telling him that he ought to find a way to overcome this grief, that the son will be with him for the rest of his life, guiding him through this pain and helping him in remembering the son. So in these dialogues back and forth, the father writes the letter, the son comes in the dream at night, they continue the dialogue, and in this process, the son and the father come up with an idea to remember the son and his life, even though he was like 17 and a half. And they establish a special fund in high school, and the fund is designed not only to remember the son, and it's after the name of the son, that's the name of the fund, but also to help to prevent similar accidents in the future, which is helping teenagers not to get drunk and, you know, and avoid alcoholic beverages and, you know, drinking and driving is definitely a bad idea not to do that. And part of it is bringing in speakers and training to teenagers and teaching them and how to not get involved in this high-risky behavior, which is drinking and driving. So, to me, it was somewhat surprising, but not quite surprising. Why? Because I heard similar stories from my own mother when I was growing up. So, the stories I heard, I remember last time I told you about a story about my great-grandmother who came up with an idea to cure my uncle, my mother's brother, who had an infection in his leg. But my mother told me stories about her own situation in life. She had to make difficult decisions. She would pray that she would find a way to connect with her great-grandmother, whom she adored, to come to her in a dream at night and give her a guidance to help her with an important decision of what to do and where to go. So, I just thought I'll mention it to you, so that's what I sort of learned it from my own mother about communicating with a person that had already died, but meeting him in a dream and communicating with them in the dream.
So that's a beautiful story. I'm really glad you shared it because you've told me this story before, but you left out an important detail that I will remind you about after this break. This is CenterPoints with Dr. Bron Unbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens, harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Special guest, Dr. Moshe Toa, my good friend, who just relayed the story of the man who spoke with his son in dreams. I actually do that even in quote-unquote daydreams. I'll suggest to people to go into the hypnotic trance, into a comfortable place, and invite their loved ones to come and join them there, their loved ones who's passed, and then they have an interaction. And they can do that even in a waking state. And you have seen similar results as to what you described with this man and his son. But I want to remind you of a detail that you've told me before in the story, but you didn't mention it yet today, which is the father woke up some mornings, and he found a letter written to him by his son. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yes, that's what, again, I was hesitant mentioning it here, but I mentioned it to you, obviously, in previous conversations, because, you know, it brings up all kinds of, you know, questions. How could this happen? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, of course, scientifically, what happened is the father is the one that woke up and wrote the letter, okay? And he wrote the letter most likely in a trance-like state, which was influenced by the spirit, if you wish, or the experiences of closeness he had with his own son. So he was able to write it in the son's, if you wish, handwriting, quote-unquote. And it looked like as if the son... spirit came in there at night and wrote the letter. However, from a scientific point of view, to explain it, it was actually the father physically, with one of his hands, wrote that letter, and it looked like the letter came from his son. So it was basically, if you wish, sort of a dialogue, which was really an inner dialogue. It was an internal dialogue within the father's own mind, between a part of his mind that were highly identified with the son and another part of his mind that was separate from the son. So it represented, if you wish, an intra-psychic conflict, which was expressed in the way it was and resolved in the way it was. So that's just one way to sort of explain what happened. But again, the important thing is I didn't say this to this man ever, that he actually wrote the letter. I let it be. He believed that his son's spirit came in and wrote the letter. And I let it be. I didn't confront him. I didn't say to him, that's a delusion. That didn't happen. What are you talking about? You actually wrote that letter, blah, blah, blah. I never said it to him. I sort of accepted that. I let it be as long as it led to a therapeutic desirable outcome.
Beautiful. So, and that's, again, what I love about you, Moshe, is that you can explain some of the potential science behind it. You know, if you and I have talked about before whether your interpretation is correct. Clinically, it doesn't matter. For the patient, it was his son, and whether you're correct or it maybe the patient's right, doesn't matter. The patient felt better. Now, I, to support your position, I want to tell you I have a patient who learned to do hypnosis, learned to talk to his subconscious, went to college, started dabbling with marijuana because his friends pushed him into it. And one morning he woke up and he found a letter that his subconscious wrote to him. And this patient knew it was his subconscious. And the letter says, you have to stop smoking weed. You have to, it's going to ruin your soccer career. The tears on this letter is for me and it's to show it's authentic. Tell your parents what you're doing and cut it out. And he woke up and he saw this letter that was written by his subconscious. He knew it was him, but that changed his life. He actually he stopped doing weed. He actually ended up dropping out of college because they were influencing poorly there. So that supports what you're saying. Amazing things can happen in sleep or in hypnotic state.
Oh, yes. Yes. I actually have one patient I have to... Do I have like 3 minutes to mention it?
Yes.
Is that okay? I have one patient that has developed this method almost into a therapeutic art. Okay? Anytime she has a conflict in life, and she discusses this with me in our sessions, and instead of me telling her what to do, I ask her to consult with her divine center from within. Divine because that is a representation of the divine spirit from above. And she has been doing it for some time, and she apparently, as she gets up at night about 1 or 2 a.m. from sleep, goes to a different room in her house, turns on the light, and a different hand takes over in writing in her journal, representing this divine center, if you wish, within her, okay, and writes to her, and she writes back, and they have an inner dialogue in writing, an inner writing dialogue, quote-unquote, back and forth. And then when she comes to her session with me, she reads to me from the journal about what that dialogue was like. She presents a problem, and that, in your language, would be her subconscious, if you wish, her center core subconscious, guiding her, giving her advice, giving her guidance, giving her direction, what to read, how to pray, how to meditate differently, what friends to meet with, what friends, quote-unquote, to cut the relationship with, because these are, quote, toxic friends. That's how that divine center from within told her. This is a toxic friend that is spreading toxicity into your mind. You should stop having a relationship with them. You should stop relating with them and so on. And she has used this as a way of solving problems and conflicts in her life.
Wonderful. So,
are you there?
I'm here, yes. This is an example of... you study inner dialogue. When I teach patients to type with themselves, I've had patients do that,
yeah.
The same kind of inner dialogue.
Yes. And so, of course, not only do I not question it or bring in doubt, I use an approach which is very similar to yours, Ron, which is, if this brings about therapeutic good outcome, let it be. I sort of join in with a patient and reinforce it with them to make it even better and stronger and so on, rather than saying, hey, this doesn't make sense. There's no spirit in there. This didn't happen, blah, 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 and so on. I just let it be. So if a patient tells me one day after they take a new pill that they already are feeling much better, I let it be. Wonderful. I'm so glad to hear it. Okay? Tell me more about how much better you're feeling. But they're saying, no, that's not possible. This is just a placebo effect.
Interesting.
Are you there, Ron?
So, So do you ever have patients who tell you things that come from the subconscious or beyond that you don't understand how they got it? What the information's from?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. But I don't focus on how they, quote, got it. I focus more on the outcome and the therapeutic outcome and how... How did they experience it? How did it make them feel? Have they had that experience before? To what extent has it helped them or someone else in their family, like a parent or a sibling or a grandparent, and so on? Looking at the source of like how they got it that way, but not questioning its veracity.
Amazing. This is Center Point with Dr. Ron Anberg.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com, or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. My special guest, my friend, Dr. Moshe Toim, who's sharing stories from amazing stories involving people and hypnosis and subconscious and the like. And Moshe, I don't know if you know this, I have the privilege of presenting a plenary session in the upcoming meeting of the annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis about the subconscious. And I'm also writing a book about the subconscious. It's going to be my third book, which will be out maybe in 4 years. It takes a long time. But in preparation for this, I've interviewed 20 subconsciouses from ranging in age from 9 to 64.
Yes.
And asking questions that I rarely ask patients, like, what's the purpose of life? And, you know, what is God? Who are you? Like, really difficult existential kind of questions. And I was looking for overlap between different people, different ages. I did that with my very first patient 25 years ago when I first encountered subconscious, but clinically it's not usually relevant questions. But in terms of understanding how people think about themselves, it was very relevant. And by the way, people who have been listening to our radio show have heard six of these interviews over the last 3 months, so anybody who's interested can actually hear some of these interviews. Now, when I ask the subconscious what is your connection with soul? The majority of the patients will have responded, either I am the soul, or I am the soul's twin, or I interact with the soul regularly. And then when we talk about what is God, I would say, I'm summarizing data now, but it's like half will say, well, most of them will say God is part of me, or I'm part of God. And some will say, I am God, which is very interesting. So I'm wondering what you'd like to comment about this. And be careful, whatever you say, I might end up mentioning the plenary session. Just kidding.
You're doing a plenary session next year in March of 2025?
Correct.
Or you have done it already in 24 this year?
I'm doing it in 2025.
Oh, my God. Congratulations, a plenary session at ASH. That is wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, guess what? I got a letter from the person at ASH inviting me to do a plenary session as well.
Wonderful. What is your topic?
Okay. My topic is going to be focused more on capturing a therapeutic future, a healing force in the future to basically internalize in the present to come up with the best solutions. That's sort of in a very brief statement about them. But back to your question, okay, about the subconscious, quote unquote. That's wonderful that you are addressing that issue. Fantastic. You know? I would just mention to you you remember a guy by the name, Dr. John Watkins?
Yes.
I'm sure you know the name. He wrote a book which is called The Therapeutic Self. I don't know if you have it or if you read it, but if you haven't, I highly recommend it. In that book, you're going to find all kinds of fantastic ideas that are very much compatible with the work you're doing with the subconscious. Okay?
Yep.
The Therapeutic Self by Dr. John Watkins. All right? So consider that. Another book I highly recommend is a book called, quote, The Soul. That's the title of the book. And it is authored by Rabbi Adin Steinzel. Have you heard the name?
Yes.
Ever?
Yep.
You have?
Okay. Yes, Steinzel.
So,
absolutely.
Dr. Adin Steinzel wrote a book titled The Soul. And I highly recommend that you take a look at it, my friend. You're going to find all kinds of interesting ideas in that book. The Soul. He wrote it in Hebrew. It was translated into English, and it's available still in print. So take a look at that. So these are two, I think, important books that you may find very, very interesting, and I would recommend. May I mention one more book? Is that okay?
Of course.
Yes? Okay. And the one more book is actually titled, let's see if I have it here. Yes. The book is titled, quote, Seeing God. It is authored by a Rabbi David Aaron. Okay?
Yep.
And Seeing God, 10 Life-Changing Lessons of the Kabbalah. So that is another interesting book, which I think may help you to connect the stuff that you are doing in the interviews of the, quote, subconscious. Okay?
Yes, that is wonderful. So I'm sure the audience of this radio program who has listened to some of the subconscious interviews may be interested in these three books that you mentioned as well. So,
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that's wonderful that you're doing this. And how much time will you have for the plenary session? At least an hour?
An hour, which is, I think, standard for both of us.
Yes, it's going to be about, we're going to have the same time. And so I look forward to listening to you, watching you. I know it's going to be done on Zoom. Am I correct?
Correct.
And so.
And likewise, I will listen to you. So we didn't even know this between the two of us. I guess another synchronicity. But what is your comment about the subconscious identifying with God? What is that? What do you think? What do you make of that?
Well, you know, what do I make of it? I would say I'm thinking I'm thinking of the words. How do I choose the words to describe this? You know, of course, the expression being, quote, a child of God, unquote. You heard that expression many times, right?
Of course.
Yes. So we are all, in a way, children of God. So when you think about it, it is, you know, there are miracles around us every day as we wake up in the morning, you know? So when you talk about the soul, if you think about a prayer and the soul, so there's a great belief, including Judaism and other faiths as well, is that when a person dies, what is buried is not them. They are not being buried. It's a dead body that's being buried. And the body is dead when the soul comes out of the body. That's when the person dies. And the soul returns to the bosom of God, quote unquote. So in a way, when you think about it that way, the soul is an extension of God. So when you speak with the subconscious, it's one way to, quote, formulate it, is that you are speaking with the soul within that person. The soul experiences itself as being an extension of God or part of God. So that's one way to sort of explain it, if you're looking for a formulation to understand it. What do you say?
I like it, and I think from my perspective, the subconscious is a conduit to God. I think when we pray through the subconscious, and I think when we act on what we learn from the subconscious, we sometimes are doing God's work, and that's the way I think of it.
You know, one of the first... Yeah, go ahead. You have to finish. Go ahead.
No,
we'll go
we're running out of time, unfortunately. We could talk for hours, as you know, and we will.
Yes.
But at this point, thank you so much, Moshe, for sharing some of your amazing stories with us and for teaching us. And I'm glad you're my friend.
Yes, and maybe you inscribed in the Book of Good Life before Yom Kippur.
And likewise to you. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.